Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
News programs from around the globe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 21CD podcast. As always, I am your ghost, John. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you like this type of weird content, consider giving me a like, a share, using those hype points if you're on YouTube, giving me a follow wherever you're listening, dropping me a 5-star, all the things that you do for the ones that you love. If you want a chance to be on the show, go ahead and hit me up at 21cdstudios.com. We've also got merch up there. And if you want even more, you can consider signing up for the YouTube memberships. We got a couple tiers there. And you get some members-only lives, you get some exclusive content, you get to help me out with my episodes, choosing my topics, all that kind of stuff, all right? Thank you very much. By now, I'm sure some of you have heard this absolutely insane story of Jonathan Gerlach. It's being described as a horror movie come to life. Basically, this Pennsylvania man was charged with stealing more than 100 human remains from a historic cemetery, the Mount Moriah Cemetery near Philadelphia. He was arrested on January 6th, so I'm a little bit behind the times, but it's still this crazy story that I think connects to the broader picture of what's going on in the world around us. This guy was announced to have more than 500 charges against him, and they say that he stole more than 100 human remains from the cemetery. Police arrested Jonathan Gerlach, whose middle name is Christian, ironically, and he's 34 years old, in the culmination of a months-long investigation into a slew of body snatchings in the 200-acre Mount Moriah Cemetery. And I'm reading from this news article. You can go ahead and examine my sources in the description of this video if you're interested.
I can say this is probably the most horrific thing that I've seen.
A total of 26 underground vaults or mausoleums were broken into and desecrated between November 7th of last year and January 6th of this year. 34-year-old Jonathan Gerlach was arrested and charged with burglary, criminal trespassing, abuse of a corpse, and other crimes. Authorities say police executed a search warrant at his home in Ephrata, Lancaster County, where they found 100 full or partial sets of human remains, including skulls and bones, in the basement. There were also 8 separate remains found in a storage locker. The medical examiner and detectives are now trying to identify the remains and notify the families affected.
Again, to the families, as the district attorney pointed out, we all have loved ones that passed. Like, rest in peace is rest in peace. And this is definitely something that tears your heartstring, especially when you see, as he pointed out, an infant having children and grandchildren.
Now, officers say that they caught Gerlach in the act of robbing a Mount Moriah burial monument. And at that time, they found him in possession of a burlap bag containing the mummified remains of 2 small children, 3 skulls, and other bones. What kind of freak do you have to be engaging in this type of activity? This is absolutely diabolical. This is some of the most can you imagine the process of digging up children, of digging up bodies in general? But I don't know, there's something especially icky about children being dug up for whatever reason you could possibly have. It's just, it gives me the ick, okay? Now, later that night, as you do, officers executed a search warrant on Gerlach's house, where they made another disturbing discovery, and that is that there were more than 100 skeletal remains filling his home, with 8 additional remains found in a nearby storage unit. And I will throw up a video, and I don't use the words throw up lightly. So if you are sensitive to this type of thing, go ahead and just skip the next minute and a half or so of this video. You won't really miss much, but you will miss the video of his basement, which is a bit much. So it is pretty gross, I guess. If you don't want to watch it, if you're sensitive to that sort of thing, then just skip the next minute and a half.
It's like my grandmother's dentures.
It is. It's fucking gross. Look at the one hanging. Ugh.
Oh my god.
Yeah, this has a couple of
look at these ones, all the ones behind you. God damn.
Oh, that one's still alive.
That's a long five. Hold on, I want to get the hand.
Oh, wow, look at this.
That's crazy. Oh, sorry. Oh, my God.
What the fuck? Is that a pacemaker?
Very simply, detectives walked into a horror movie come to life. Delaware County District Attorney Tanner Rouse said during a news conference, "This is an unbelievable scene that nobody involved, from myself to the detectives to the medical examiners that are now trying to quite literally piece all of this together, none of them have ever seen anything like this before." Now, while the majority of the remains were found in Gerlach's basement, the large collection was also scattered throughout the home in various states of decay. Some of these bodies still had skin on them. Some were in pieces. Some were full bodies. Some were just the torsos, just the legs, just the arms. There were skulls and mummified heads in decorative cases and displays. He was turning them into various pieces of art. He would walk around town with them in his hands. He would go across country on his motorcycle, carrying pieces with him and all sorts of stuff like that. Some of the pieces were hanging from the ceiling. Some were just in piles on the floor. And while medical examiners in Delaware and Lancaster County continue their efforts to identify the remains, the police said that Gerlach's collection of remains vary greatly in terms of burial dates. "We have to understand that some of these are 200 years old," Rouse said. "Some are obviously much newer. There's one with a pacemaker still attached to the body." Rouse added that the ages of the deceased also varied considerably, with officials believing that at least one set of remains belonged to a months-old infant. Established in 1855, Mount Moriah Cemetery contains the remains of veterans from the French and Indian War, also from the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, and the American Civil War. So imagine, you fought under George Washington. You took a bullet, a round, and you're bleeding out. You're looking out on the horizon, bleeding out. You're about to die, not even realizing that in a couple hundred years or so, you're going to be being fondled by a 34-year-old man in his basement, and then being used as decor or being sold on Facebook Marketplace for a few shekels. Can you even imagine? Absolutely crazy. Because they are investigating whether or not he sold any of the stolen remains, but given the fact that he was a member of a Facebook group titled Human Bones and Skull Selling Group, it's pretty likely. He was also featured on Facebook holding various bones and skulls. He had an Instagram account with the username DeadShitDaddy, which appears to be available if anybody wants it, because I tried to find it and they must have taken it down. But allegedly, he was also on his Instagram posting all sorts of bones and posing with all sorts of bones with captions that appeared to be hinting that they were for sale. So, there you have it. Gerlach remains in custody, and he's being held on a $1 million bail, which is more than we can say for the people on the Epstein list. So I guess that shows you where our priorities are. But this is nothing new. As most people know, grave robbing is somewhat of an ancient and primal practice. Grave robbing is also often discussed in very shallow and almost like economic style terms, as if it were just another variation of theft, which is why I use the word primal. But in a spiritual sense, in a mental capacity, for people who have humanity in them, a grave kind of functions as a cultural and spiritual boundary marker, right? It declares that a person's body, their name, and remnants may have passed out of ordinary circulation and into a sort of protected state. So to disturb that space is to essentially challenge the very idea that there are limits that the living humans must observe. In this sense, grave robbing is a bit of a spiritual trespass, isn't it? Because burial practices, whether they're secular or religious, they tend to formalize a sort of contract between the living and the dead. The living often feel a type of responsibility for protecting the dead, for maintaining the cemeteries, etc. And the dead, when they weren't dead, often have an opinion on how they want to be cared for afterwards. Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be put in a coffin? Do you want your ashes scattered all over the Atlantic Ocean? What do you want, buddy? In some beliefs, the handling of a corpse can impact what type of afterlife that person even has. For instance, in some of the Viking traditions, if you decapitate them, their bodies, you might not get the best afterlife. So, even when a culture denies that the dead retain consciousness, it often does preserve the belief that the dead retain claims to respect and the integrity of their resting place and the dignity of their dead body. And grave robbery just violates all of that. It throws it all out the window. It treats the corpse, and by extension, the person, as an object that is still available for use. And that's a form of post-mortem cannibalism, post-mortem vampirism, if you ask me. If you've been following this show for a while, you know we discussed both topics, vampirism and cannibalism, greatly. We discuss them often on this show. And grave robbing, necromancy, these sort of activities, they are just one more extension of this abysmal habit that humanity can't seem to shake that has been handed down by demonic forces and the Nephilim. We also see this in the case of Mumia, by the way, and how the explorers who discovered the mummies in Egypt would ship the ground-up remains of mummies, right, back to Europe for consumption, as if it provided some kind of health value. It was a form of snake oil to be sold to the masses, and they would be eating the dead bodies of these ancient mummies, believing that it provided them with some sort of health value. This whole process essentially reclassifies a human being into salvage. So when a gravesite is violated, that harm tends to radiate outwards to the families as well. It's not just the dead who are impacted. Those are people's ancestors. Those are people's history. Families experience not only grief, but also a kind of secondary assault, because the dead are re-entered into the realm of conflict and exploitation when they should be beyond it. We see this type of emotional portrayal in zombie movies too, when loved ones are forced to re-kill their loved ones that have zombified. It's in every single zombie movie. Oh, I want to keep my wife. She turned into a zombie. I'm going to chain her to the chair so we can have dinner together still. I'm going to keep my daughter or my son in a cage and carry him around with me everywhere I go so that I don't have to be separated from them. In that sort of way, grave robbing, where the remains are sort of brought back to the surface, or necromancy, where the dead are sort of brought back to life, portray that same fundamental concept that is in all of these zombie movies. So, and then on a social level, even if you're going to take the zombie idea out of it, the act sort of communicates that even the final shelter of a grave can be penetrated, that nowhere is sacred. No sanctuary is real, not even for the dead. And that is a very troubling thought for mortal man. For those who don't know, necromancy is the practice of magic involving communication with the dead by summoning their spirits as apparitions or visions for the purpose of divination, imparting the means to foretell future events, discover hidden knowledge. It's sometimes categorized under black magic, sometimes death magic, witchcraft, or like I said, black magic as a whole. Often this type of activity is undertaken by witches and warlocks. Necromancers are essentially that, and many magic spells and black and death magic involve the pieces of dead people. Early necromancy was related to and most likely evolved from forms of shamanism or prehistoric ritual magic that calls upon spirits such as the ghosts of deceased forebears. It was prevalent, for instance, throughout antiquity with records of its practice in ancient Egypt, Babylonia, Greece, Rome, China. It's a pretty widespread practice.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
In his Geographica, Strabo refers to necromantia, or diviners by the dead, as the foremost practitioners of divination among the people of Persia. And it's believed to have also been widespread among the people of Chaldea, particularly the Hermeticists, or the star worshippers. We cover this once in a while on this show as well. The Babylonian necromancers were called Manzazu or Sha-Etemu, and the spirits they raised were called, of course, the Etemu. And the Bible, as we know, tells us not to commune with the dead, which in of itself tells you that it's 100% possible to do so, and makes you wonder how much necromancy, such as that has been performed, if you will, implicated? I don't know. What am I trying to say here? Basically, if you destroy a gravesite and you take the body from it, it's my understanding, it's my belief, and it's my theory that you are performing an act of necromancy. I think that is the beginning stage of the magic. You are violating the grave. Therefore, you are committing, in part, the spell. You are in the infancy stage of what is to come, which is bringing the dead back to the surface. So it does make me wonder how much necromancy is accidental and how much damage grave robbers who simply rob graves for financial reasons are contributing to this whole demonic mess, this Nephilim adjacent activity upon the planet. The book of Deuteronomy explicitly warns the Israelites against engaging in the Canaanite practice of divination from the dead. Deuteronomy 18, 9 through 12 says, "When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do according to the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you any one who maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or who useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all those who do these things are abominations unto the Lord." For all who do these things are an abomination unto the Lord. Excuse me. "And because of these abominations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee." Then you also have the Mosaic Law, which prescribed the death penalty to practitioners of necromancy, as displayed in Leviticus 20:27. But this warning was not always heeded. People did not always give an F about this for one reason or another. And one of the foremost examples is when King Saul had the Witch of Endor invoke the spirit of Samuel, a judge and a prophet, to divine the outcome of a coming battle. The so-called witch was shocked at the presence of a familiar spirit in the image of Samuel. For in Samuel 28:7 states, "Behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor." And in 1 Samuel 28:12, it says, "When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out in a loud voice, and the familiar spirit questioned his reawakening, asking if he was Samuel the prophet. Why hast thou disquieted me?" Saul died the next day in combat, with Chronicles 10:13 implying this was due to the prohibition against necromancy. So just don't mess around with the dead, is the general idea. But we also talk about the concept that witchcraft and Nephilim disguises and magic, hidden magics, they evolve with time to become more accepting to man as man becomes more and more quote-unquote modern. You know, we stop calling something cannibalism or vampirism when it's simply using stem cells or adrenochrome or something like that, right? We stop calling something magic or sorcery and we instead call it science or something like that, right? In the present day, necromancy is more generally used as a kind of term to describe manipulation of death and the dead, or the pretense thereof, often facilitated through the use of ritual magic or some other kind of occult ceremony. And we can see how witchcraft and demonic influence evolves over time, once again, through the practice of breaking open graves, displaying body parts as if they are art, turning body parts into artistic features, selling them for money. Money is the root of all evil. We see that the witchcraft is not always gathering in a little circle with you and your three goth friends and chanting something you made up or mispronouncing Latin that you read from a book that was written in 1944 or something like that. Now, as to the practice of necromancy having endured in one form or another throughout time, an Encyclopedia of Occultism states that the art is of almost universal usage. Considerable difference of opinion exists among modern adepts as to the exact methods to be properly pursued in the necromantic art, and it must be borne in mind that necromancy, which in the Middle Ages was called sorcery, shades into modern spiritualistic practice. There is no doubt, however, that necromancy is the touchstone of occultism. We've also got this Ed Gein guy, Netflix's favorite body snatcher, Ed Gein. In German, it would be Gein. I don't know how everybody likes to pronounce it these days, but I will pronounce it in the original German. Ed Gein, also known as the Butcher of Plainfield or the Plainfield Ghoul. He was an American murderer, a serial killer. You might have seen the show, or I don't know, maybe even been alive long enough to know who he was, read the newspapers or heard stories from your parents or something. I don't know, but he was a serial killer and a body snatcher, and his crimes were committed around his hometown in Plainfield, Wisconsin. He gathered widespread notoriety in 1957 after authorities discovered that he stole corpses from local graveyards and fashioned keepsakes from their bones and skin. He also confessed to killing two women, tavern owner Mary Hogan in 1954, and then hardware store owner Bernice Warden in 1957. He was born in La Crosse County, by the way, which is not very far from where I live. Wisconsin just has so many weirdos here. Don't be looking at me like that. I have no bodies in you. All this is fake. This is all fake. This is all fake. There's no real bodies anywhere around me, okay? Don't worry. All this Don't worry about this. This is all just to remind me of where I will someday be. Okay? When Guyne's abusive parents died, he held on to the farm and earned money from odd jobs. He was also getting payouts from the government for disabilities or something like that, I think. But around this time, he became interested in reading pulp magazines and adventure stories, particularly those that involved cannibals or Nazi atrocities, especially concerning Ilsa Koch, who had been accused of selecting tattooed prisoners for death to fashion lampshades and other items from their skin. I'm sure you have seen the ridiculous stories of her. Some don't even claim that those stories are, some claim those stories aren't true at all. I don't know personally. I did some research into it and I found so much controversial, so many controversial takes on that. So I just never really covered it. But allegedly, this Nazi woman would choose specific Jews who were in the concentration camp to be killed so that she could actually use them for fashioning lampshades and furniture and stuff like that. And Guyne was very influenced by this. She was his hero. And he was arrested at a West Plainfield grocery store for a murder that he had committed. It was Warden, I believe, that he murdered her. So the sheriff's department came and got him, and then, of course, they searched his farm, and they discovered her decapitated body in a shed on Guyne's property, hung upside down by her legs, with a crossbar at her ankles and ropes at her wrist. The torso had allegedly been dressed out like a deer, and she had been shot with a .22 caliber rifle. Mutilations were also made after her death. But upon searching Guyne's house, the authorities found whole human bones and fragments, a waste basket made of human skin covering several chairs, human skulls mounted on bedposts, female skulls, some with the tops sawn off, bowls made from human skulls, a corset made from a female torso skinned from the shoulders to the waist, leggings made from human leg skin, masks made from the skin of female heads, Mary Hogan's face mask in a paper bag, and her skull in a box, and then, of course, Bernice Warden's entire head in a burlap sack, and her heart in a plastic bag in front of Guyne's potbelly stove, and a belt made from female human nipples. They also found four noses, a pair of lips on a window shade drawstring, and a lampshade made from the skin of a human face. So not really the type of guy you want to bring home to mom, okay? When questioned, Guyne told the investigators that between 47 and 52, he had made as many as 40 nocturnal visits to three local graveyards to exhume recently buried bodies. He wasn't killing all of these people. He was digging them up, and he said that he was often in a daze-like state. He preferred the graves of recently buried middle-aged women that he thought resembled his mother, and he took those bodies home, where he tanned their skins to make his paraphernalia, if you will. Soon after his mother's death, Guyne began to create this woman suit so that he could essentially become his mother, to literally crawl into her skin and roleplay as her. But he did deny having any premarital intercourse with any of the bodies that he exhumed because he said they smelled too bad. During the crime laboratory interrogation, he did admit to a couple of the murders, and there's still other murders that they're trying, that they, I assume, are still trying to, and were then trying to also pin on him. He had shrunken heads in his house as well that his little girlfriend at the time claimed, he told her that they were sent to him from some buddies who were fighting in the war from the Philippines or something like that. And upon investigation by police, these were also determined to be actual human facial skins carefully peeled from corpses and used by Gein as masks. So a total freak. And there's no way to say this is not demonic activity. There's no way to say that this is not a violation of some sort, whether you are a Christian or not, whether you are spiritual or not. Gein went on to be the inspiration for a myriad of serial killers, most notably Norman Bates from Psycho, Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, and a couple others. A total monster, and yet we worship him on the big screen. There's other freaks out here that I would like to mention too, to show you just how widespread this practice is, and not only how widespread it is, but how it's rarely a one-time thing, how it's often a thing that is done many times by the people who do it. There's like a sort of addiction to it, which is strange. In that way, it's also like cannibalism and vampirism, isn't it? Because you don't do it just one time. These people are doing this hundreds of times or dozens of times at a minimum. This isn't a single isolated sin that somebody commits. There's this guy, a Russian, Anatoly Yurevich Moskvin. He was a linguist. I guess he's still alive. He's a philologist and historian who was arrested in 2011 after the mummified bodies of 29 young girls between the ages of 3 and 13 were discovered in his apartment. After exhuming these bodies from cemeteries in his area, he mummified them himself, and then he dressed them up and posed them around his house. Allegedly, he would also celebrate their birthdays, he would watch kid movies with them, he would read books to them, and his parents, who shared the apartment with him while all of this was going on, they knew that the dolls existed, but it didn't occur to them that they were actual, real bodies. They even had one of these mummified girls in their own bedroom, which is just diabolical to even think about.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
After a psychiatric evaluation, I guess they determined that Moskvin had a form of paranoid schizophrenia. And in May 2012, he was sentenced to court-ordered psychiatric evaluation and has since been held in a psychiatric hospital. What do you think we should do to people like this? That's just, it's not a real question you have to answer right now, but ponder it. What do you, if sacred texts such as the Bible will say something like these people are doomed to be put to death or are punishable by death, is that appropriate for people who do this kind of thing? I mean, honestly, is a psychiatric hospital enough? I don't know. Is paranoid schizophrenia just another term for demonic possession? Regardless, in an interview after Moskvin's arrest, he stated that he felt great sympathy for these dead kids and thought that they could be brought back to life by either science or, wait for it, black magic. He was a necromancer. But he didn't start out that way. He was an expert on Celtic culture, and he learned that the ancient druids slept on graves in order to communicate with spirits of their dead. He also studied the culture of the peoples of Siberia, in particular the ancient Yakuts, and discovered they had a similar practice for communicating with the dead. So he began searching for obituaries of recently deceased children, and when he found an obituary that spoke to him, as he says, he would sleep on that child's grave in order to determine if the spirit wished to be brought back to life. And then he claimed he had been doing it for around 20 years and insisted that when he began, he never dug up a grave without the permission of the child within that grave. Of course, he grew older, and it became physically painful for him to sleep on the graves, so he began bringing the bodies home with him, where it would be more comfortable to sleep near them. And he hoped the spirits would be more willing to speak within a safe, welcoming home, and that they might be easier to hear when they were no longer underground. So he would dig up the corpses, and then he taught himself how to mummify them. And he learned all these techniques of mummification to preserve the bodies, and then he dried the corpses using a combination of salt and baking soda. And again, I will throw up some pictures of his dolls, if you will, and keep in mind that I also almost threw up looking at some of these photos. So again, if you don't want to see any of this, just close your eyes and for the next few seconds, just listen to me. But regardless, once the bodies dried up, Mosvin carried them to his home, where he used various methods to make dolls, as he called them, in an attempt to give the children functional bodies to be used when he eventually discovered a way to bring them back to life. Because he didn't want them to be too decayed or too ugly, or for them to feel uncomfortable or unhappy with their appearance once he inevitably figured out a way to bring them back to life. But of course, as dead bodies do, they began to wither and shrink. So as they did this, he continually stuffed the cavities with cloth and wrapped them up in all sorts of garments and fabric and stuff to keep them from looking like, well, dead bodies. And he would also make wax masks for them, and he would paint over the faces with nail polish. He would change their clothes. He would give them wigs. He would do all these sorts of things, leading to even his parents believing that these were just giant dolls and that he was not some kind of psychopathic tard. Okay? Moskvin said that he was aware that he was committing a crime, but he felt that the dead children were calling out to be rescued and believed that rescuing the children was more important than obeying the law. Now, I think this is very interesting because we're just taught to believe in modern society that this is some kind of, oh, this is just a mental illness. This is just a simple mental illness. This is demonic influence, okay? This is literally necromancy. This is demons at work upon this man. And we're just led to believe that this is because this is something that can be healed with science, or at least kept under wraps, pardon the pun, with scientific explanations. He just has a mental disorder. This is demon activity. This is not some sort of disorder. This is a possession. But Moskvin kind of, he didn't even know, it appeared, that what was happening to him wasn't actually happening to him. These children were not calling out to him, and yet he truly believed they were. In 2011, there were these two Pakistani brothers. This is a pretty disgusting story, as if the other ones haven't been. And they went by the names Muhammad Arif and Farman Ali, and they were jailed for digging up graves and stealing as many as 150 bodies and eating them. Police raided their house twice. The first time they were only arrested for like a year, maybe two, a year and a half or so. And they were arrested again in 2014 when it was found that they were still eating people, because there's no law against eating people. There's no anti-cannibalism law in Pakistan. Go figure. So the police arrested these guys twice. But after being released the first time, the police suspected that the two brothers were going to be continuing their activities, their cannibalism, their grave robbing. And they had been caught red-handed by locals when they dug up a grave and removed the body of a child in 2011. A child of their next-door neighbor, by the way. And Hussein explained that the two brothers were handed down just this year-long sentence. They were released in 2013, and then they went straight back to their horrible habits. And the local residents of this area all had like protests. They had riots about the release of the two brothers. So the two brothers went into hiding after they got released the first time. And they were married, they had children. Farman Ali had 5 kids. But sometime before the two dug up their first corpse, both their wives allegedly divorced them and moved away, taking all the kids with them, just leaving these two freaks to exist in each other's demonic auras and weird energies. And they lived in like this weird abandoned house. And the two believed that their wives were just, they couldn't handle them. They were eloping with other men. And then according to the police, they started eating corpses in their own way to gain manhood. They thought it made them stronger, more better men. And so the police tracked down their wives and they told police that they left their husbands because they didn't work. They beat them. They locked them inside this abandoned house. And then the two brothers would always go out at odd hours in the middle of the night. But Arif finally confessed, and he told police about a different motive for their cannibalism. He claimed that he visited a black magician. What a surprise. This occultist who advised him to eat the remains of the dead living things for good fortune and a good future for his kids. So we're seeing another form of black magic, of necromancy adjacent work here that started with simple grave robbing. And this claim is supported as the police received a lead stating that the brothers were in contact with a man suspected to be a sorcerer and who was caught trying to steal a body from a grave years earlier. Ali also admitted to writing verses of the Quran in reverse in order to cast a spell on his neighbors. This was very shocking for the people that were all around these guys. There was much horror and outrage from the public, not just in the village, but in all of Pakistan. And this is in 2013, so you can like look this up yourself. It's absolutely crazy. There's so many pictures of these guys. But alongside all these threats to lynch the brothers, some of the villagers gave up eating meat altogether, with people being frantically rushed over to their relatives' graves to make sure that they were still freaking there, that they were still in the ground. And some families resorted to having cement poured over their gravesites, their family's gravesites, to keep them sealed shut because they were so afraid that these brothers were going to dig them, their family members, up and eat them. It was a really crazy time to be in Pakistan, as if there's ever a time where it's not crazy to be in Pakistan. But there were also speculations that Ali was lying about having only been cannibalizing dead bodies since such an early time, and instead many believe that they had been doing this for over a decade. And villagers expressed shock at what the brothers did because it was believed that more people knew about it than they let on. So they were like, how can anybody not be reporting these guys, and how is there no law putting these guys in jail or in the grave themselves, but there's no law against cannibalism in Pakistan. Some told the media that for a few of the villagers, it was an open secret, and the brothers and their little clan, their group of friends, would cover up their actions so that it wouldn't bring them any shame, essentially, so that they didn't have any ridicule, so they could continue being allegedly functioning members of society while they continued to dig up the body, the family members of all of their neighbors and eat them. And after all of this kind of bubbled over and they were once again taken into police custody, many lawyers who heard of this case wanted them to be examined by a psychiatrist, but the police refused to invite any of them and argued that they behaved normally while they were locked up in their cells. So the investigation was never actually completed. The two brothers, they got a lawyer who said that they're not insane, they're just fools, whatever that means. And then later that same year, a court convicted them on the charges and sentenced both brothers to a mere 2 years imprisonment. So they served their sentence, they were released in 2013, and when the residents found out about the release, they were very unhappy. So they protested. They set numerous tires on fire on a major highway in the area so that they could block the traffic for several hours. And then they publicly threatened to lynch the brothers, prompting the police to take them into protective custody where they stayed, living a quiet life away from everyone else. That's according to BBC. And when BBC tried to track them down, they basically just said no. They found like a family friend, and that family friend was just like, no, all the neighbors are just jealous of their success. Just a completely unresolved story. Just an unfinished tale of diabolical cannibalism and grave robbery and necromancy. And I was kind of confused about the timeline because it seemed like these guys were just animals left without a leash, animals just left to roam about the country and commit atrocities whenever, wherever, and however they felt like, much like the ones that are in the United States right now, running rampant, doing whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want. So on April 14th of 2014, it seems like, again, residents reported a foul odor to the police coming from the brothers' home. And knowing their history, the police didn't really take these reports lightly, so they raided the home. And once they got inside, they arrested Arif and found a human skull belonging to a male child aged 2 to 3 years old and who had died long before the raid. Farman Ali was missing. So the police conducted several raids across the local area, tracking him down, and then they eventually arrested him. Ali confessed while Arif denied helping his brother and denied eating the child, and only confessed to knowing about Ali dismembering and cooking him into a curry.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus, terms and conditions apply.
Absolutely crazy stuff. But this second or third arrest, whichever one it was, eventually led the police to examine every grave in the area to see if they had been disturbed, and the police stated that they had likely desecrated and eaten hundreds of bodies, these brothers. So by 2014, cannibalism still not being outlawed in Pakistan, the brothers could only really be charged with trespassing and desecrating a corpse and grave. The prosecutors wanted to ensure, of course, a harsher sentence this time, since these are repeat offenders, and charged them under Pakistani's anti-terrorism laws. They argued that the smell coming from their home, combined with the prior history and the fear that had spread amongst all of the neighbors and residents in the area, was an act of terrorism. And honestly, I think that witchcraft, necromancy, black magic, death magic should be considered an act of terrorism. This argument was accepted, and the two brothers were tried by an anti-terrorism court, and then they were thrown in jail. They were given a 12-year imprisonment, and they were given a pretty hefty fine. And then, of course, the Pakistani lawmakers, a few of them at least, drafted an amendment to try to make cannibalism illegal in Pakistan and punishable by a maximum of 10 years in prison. But wouldn't you know, the law failed to pass, and the two brothers were granted an early release in 2020. So they're still out there, probably not really that changed, not really different from their old grave-robbing cannibalistic selves. I mean, who knows? With the state of Pakistan right now, it's really hard to tell who's alive and who's not, isn't it? Everybody's sort of eating everybody over there. We live in these really dark times, guys. Everything that we've gone over is not from that long ago. We're talking about the 2000s. We're talking about the 50s. We're talking about the 60s. This is not that we're talking about earlier this year, within the past couple weeks. The idea that necromancy, that cannibalism, that grave desecration and witchcraft relating to it. Black magic and death magic are all these elements of antiquity or medieval ages or practices is just not true. Magic of this type, evils of this type, though we would like to leave them far in the past, they're not back there. They're very present. They're among you at any given time. We need to consider these things when we think about mental illnesses, people who commit atrocities. We need to factor in demonic activity as for a reason why some of these things are committed. It's not as simple as just, oh yeah, he's got a couple screws up there loose. Really? That's why he ate hundreds of people? That's why he dug up hundreds of graves? Because he's got a couple screws loose? So if we just give him, I don't know, 5 to 10 years in a psychiatric facility, he'll be good, and then we'll let him back out. Postmortem cannibalism, postmortem vampirism, it doesn't seem like the forces of evil are done with your body when you die. It seems like there's still some kind of value there, even though the life is in the blood. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.